This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you all to this breakout session entitled Developing Your Leadership to Be List. Our speaker, Merle Burkholder, is a pastor at Believers Fellowship in Sioux Lookout, Ontario, and he feels deeply about the importance of leadership in our churches and our communities. He's taken a number of university courses on leadership, as well as been involved in leadership development mentoring programs. So we look forward to what he has to share with us. Let's give him our attention. Merle.
Thank you, David. And just make sure you understand my title. Often we talk about making a to-do list and the things that we're going to do, but I believe that in leadership it's more important who you are than what you do. And so I want to talk about what are the characteristics that you should have in order to be a good leader. Robert Clinton says in his book on leadership that the central task of leadership is influencing God's people towards God's purposes. Leadership is basically influence, and influencing people to do the things that God wants them to do. One of my brother-in-laws always laughs at me because he asked me one time what my job is, and I said, my job is getting people to do the things they ought to do and making them think that they thought of it themselves. And so, but really, that's the role of a good leader, because you don't really, in the end, you don't want people to say, well, you know, I did what Merle told me to do and it was pretty good. No, you want them to be able to say, we did this, and it happened, and you influence people. You have a certain amount of influence, and how you use that influence is very important. Character is the primary focus. When you look at the leadership qualifications in the New Testament for leaders in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in Titus chapter 1, the focus is on character qualities. That's what Paul was saying. That's what you want to look for. You want to look for people who have the right character qualities. He wasn't saying, look for somebody who's successful, look for somebody who speaks well, look for somebody who has, you know, whatever. But he was focused on character qualities, and that's how they were choosing leaders. And Keith Anderson and Randy Reese's book, Spiritual Mentoring, they have a to-be list, and they talk about the process of leadership. And one is the attraction, where you're pulling people into your sphere of influence. You begin well, you build a relationship, and that relationship, then in that relationship, you develop trust and intimacy, and people begin to believe in you, they begin to have confidence in you, they trust you. And then responsiveness, displaying a spirit of teachability. Nobody knows everything. I was talking to somebody the other day and was saying, the only person who can't learn anything is the person who thinks they know it all already. And so teachability is just saying, there's things that I don't know. And one of the important skills in life is to be aware of what you don't know. Because actually, there's a lot of things that we don't know. And to be curious about the things we don't know and to be a learner throughout life is important. And then accountability, expectations, and grace. The closer a relationship is, the more need there is for forgiveness in that relationship. No relationship is going to work without grace or forgiveness. And the more time you spend with the person, the closer you are in relationship, the more there is that need for grace and forgiveness. But at the same time, there are expectations. And knowing what those expectations are is important. And then empowerment, lifting other people up and helping other people to be successful. The truly successful leader is the person who helps other people to be successful, who is looking and observing gifts in other people and helping them to accomplish all that God has in mind for them. And so, you know, a lot of people lack confidence. A lot of people lack a sense of significance and worth and value. And for you to, as a leader, to be able to have a vision of what God might want to do with the people that you're leading, and to help them to catch a vision of what God could do with their lives is part of the role of being a leader. Now, you have your sheet. We're going to go through this diagram that talks about some of the characteristics of an effective leader. And at the top is trust. The whole thing is built on trust. If you don't trust somebody, it's going to be really hard to develop a relationship. It's going to be, if you're in an organization or you're in a leadership position and you don't trust the other people on your team or people don't trust you, that's going to go south real fast. It's just not going to work, because you're always going to be second guessing either what the other person's motives are, what they're thinking. And, you know, I've found so often in talking to people that when people start saying, well, they think that, 90% of the time they're wrong, because you don't know what other people think. You don't know what their motives are. You may think you know, but in reality, when you actually sit down with somebody and say, why did you say that? Why did you do that? You might be really surprised, because maybe the reason you thought they said it, or the reason you thought they did what they did, wasn't their motivation at all. And so so much is built on trust, and being able to trust, for people to be able to trust you as a leader, and for you to be able to trust the people that you're teamed up with. Because how you feel about a person, and whether you think that they are trustworthy or not, whether you think their motives are to help you or to hurt you, makes a huge difference and how you respond to what happens. Often we say, well, behaviors have to change and people have to start doing something and they have to stop doing something. But as a matter of fact, it often comes down to just, do I really trust them? And do I think that they're out to hurt me or to help me? So think with me on this. Let's suppose that you go to a friend's house, and this is somebody you really like, and they're a really good friend, and you go there and you're having dinner there. And so your hostess tells you where, you know, you sit at the table and all that. And then she's coming to the table and she has a hot bowl of tomato soup. And just as she gets to the table, she trips and spills it in your lap. What are you going to do? You're going to say, no problem. That's fine. No, it's all right. It didn't hurt that much. It wasn't that hot. And I'm sure it'll wash out. And it's only tomato. And hey, if it doesn't wash out, I kind of hated these clothes anyway. You gave me a chance to buy new clothing. And so, you know, because you're thinking, she must feel awful. Like, she must feel really bad. If I did that to her, I'd feel really bad. So you try and minimize it, downplay it, make sure she feels okay and doesn't feel bad about it. You don't sit there and say, she planned that. She wanted to hurt me. She wants to ruin my clothing. Like, she told me where to sit, right? I bet she practiced this afternoon. I bet she said, yeah, if he sits here and I trip right about here, that should do it. I can't have friends like this. Like, I'm never coming to this person's house again, because I can't have people who ruin my clothing and hurt me like that. Like, I'm not coming here again. That's it. No, you don't think that at all. But then let's suppose you go to somebody's house that you don't like very much, and you're sitting across the table from them eating. Just the way they hold their fork can drive you crazy, right? So you think about the difference in magnitude of those two things. Somebody you trust and like can pour a bowl of hot soup on you, and you're like, no problem, that's good. Somebody you don't like holds their fork a little weird, and you're like, oh man, I just can't take this. Like, I don't know why I come to this person's house. I just don't like it. You know, it just drives me crazy. But you see, trust and how you interpret things makes a huge difference. A number of years ago, I was in an administrative team with two other men, and I had a ministry project that failed. I don't remember what it was, but I know it didn't work. And it didn't just fail kind of in a quiet way on the side somewhere. Like, it was public. Like, everybody knew it failed. And so we got to our next administrative meeting, and these other two guys, they started telling me how bad that was and how badly it turned out and what I could have done differently and all that. And I'm thinking, guys, like, I know it failed. You don't have to tell me. Like, kick me when I'm down, all right? And so I went out of there. It was a two-day meeting. I went out of there. I went home and told my wife, oh, those guys, man, they really – that was brutal. Like, I don't know what they were trying to – but that was painful. I know it failed. They don't have to tell me it failed. I know why it failed. And I don't need them to remind me of it. I know what went wrong. And my wife said, that doesn't sound right. I think you should go back tomorrow and ask them what they were trying to say. So I'm not going back tomorrow now. I know what they were trying to say. And I'm not going to go back and ask for a round two. Like it was bad enough the first time. I'm not going to volunteer for a second round. And she said, well, it doesn't sound right. I think you misunderstood what they were trying to say. I think you should go back tomorrow and ask them what they were trying to say. So I know she's a wise woman, so I went back the next day and I said, you know, yesterday, like, you guys were telling me about how this thing failed, and it felt to me like you were kicking me when I'm down. And, like, what were you trying to say? What was the point? And they said, oh, no, that wasn't it at all. We were, like, we've had things that failed, and we were just trying to empathize with you and let you know we know how it feels when things don't turn out right. And now, at that point, I had a decision to make, right? Are they lying to me now? or not? And how I answer that question makes a huge difference. Because, see, it comes down to trust. If I trust, no, they didn't intend to hurt me. And even though it seems really weird to me, it was their way of empathy. So I have to accept it as that's really what they were trying to do. I probably wouldn't do it that way, but that was really their motive. If I answer that question that way, then as we get into more meetings and we're relating to each other, we're working together, then I trust. Yeah, they're not trying to hurt me. They're actually trying to empathize. They're actually trying to help me. However, if I say, no, they're lying to me. They really were trying to hurt me. Now they're just trying to make me feel good, and they don't want to look bad, so now they're lying to me. The next couple meetings, every time I go into a meeting with them, they're going to say something. I'm going to say, well, there they go again. Look at that. You know, yeah, same thing. And I'm going to start keeping track of all the times they nail me. And every little thing that happens, it's going to be kind of like, okay, go ahead, guy. Yeah, nail me again. And then I begin to build a history, and I begin to build a list of how bad they are and all the things. And that's why if trust isn't there, it's just not going to work. And either you have to get to the point where you deal with things and you trust each other, or it's just going to become a bigger and bigger gulf that gets fixed between you in relationships. So one of the primary things in leadership, if you're going to have influence with people, you have to have trust. They have to trust you, and you have to trust them. And you have to work hard to build trust. Well, what is trust built on? Trust, first of all, is built on character. Character comes out of intent and integrity. So you have intent, you have integrity. Character comes from the intent that I intend to help you. I'm for you. My intentions are good. And also integrity, that I'm not lying to you. I'm not going to try and make you think one thing when actually something else is happening. But I have your best interests in mind, and then caring, that I actually care about you, and I care about the things that you're involved in, and I'm going to try and I'm going to care for you, and I'll make sure that you are taken care of. I will actually hear what you're saying, and I'll actually identify with your feelings and what's happening. We had a group of single ladies one time that we had on staff, and they had challenges getting along with each other, and just the way it was working, we were having a turnover of staff, and a number of those single ladies were leaving, and they were being replaced by single men. And at one of our staff meetings, I just made the comment, well, I'm kind of looking forward to some of these staff changes, like, you know, single men just don't have the problems that single women do, because single men, they just kind of slug it out, and then they get over it, and it works. Well, the next day, one of the ladies came to me and said, Merle, like, what were you trying to say? Like, how are we supposed to feel about ourselves as women if that's really how you feel about women? And you know what? I had to listen to that and say, she's right. Like, I did not. That was not right. I should not have said that. I probably shouldn't have even thought it. But I certainly shouldn't have said it. And it's not the kind of heart attitude that I want to have. And I am not going to be slinging out barbs at people and kind of attacking who they are. It's just not right. And I'm going to be a caring person. And I'm going to care about people's feelings and hear what they have to say. And then transparency. That what you see is what you get. I'm going to be open with you. I'm not going to be hiding things from you. I'm not going to surprise you. You're not going to get into a meeting and all of a sudden I'm going to nail you with something that I've been thinking for a long time, but I didn't have the courage to tell you privately. But, you know, in the context of a group, I'm going to put it out there. Or the other way, I won't be dishonest in a group and then come to you privately and kind of be saying stuff that I don't have the courage to say in a group. Just to really be real and be transparent, and for people to honestly be able to know what you're thinking and to know that they can talk to you and you're going to tell them what's going on in your mind, what you're thinking. One of the things that will trip us up in leadership is surprises. People don't like surprises. Sometimes we run scared, and we may realize that a change needs to be made. We may realize that something has to happen. And we kind of think the best thing to do is just kind of plot this in secret and then all of a sudden one day just announce it and boom, this is what we're going to do. But that's really not a very good strategy. Like, it's much better to be open and transparent, be talking to people about what you're thinking, what's going on in your mind, and you make progress together toward what needs to be done. Openness goes along with that. People will trust you if you're open with what you're thinking. And you're open with what's going on. You're not hiding things and having agendas, hidden agendas, when you're in discussions with people. You're not manipulating people. You're not kind of trying to get them all on your side before you get to an important meeting and make sure that you know what everybody's going to say before you get there. It just, the openness and transparency are important. And then there's honesty. Where you really tell the truth, and that can be hard. You know, one of the things that I think is everybody wants to know how they're doing, and one of the gifts that you give to the people that you are in leadership with is to be honest with them. And I just believe that a regular, systematic way of doing performance reviews or evaluations, whatever you want to call them, program assessments, just honestly saying, this is how I see you. These are your strengths. These are your weaknesses. How can we work with it? What can I do to help you? But here's some things that you do really well. Here's some things that you really need to improve in. But a systematic way of doing things, of doing that. See, one of the things that happens when you do consistently a regular performance review, whether it's annually or however often you do it, but traditionally a lot of people do it on an annual basis, is it gives a platform to talk about the things that maybe if you just raised them individually, it would put them out of proportion for their significance. And because, you know, if I call somebody and I have a meeting with them and I say, you know, you really ought to do better at this or that, and that's the only thing I'm talking to them about, it's sort of like, oh, that's a big deal. But if it's in the context of an evaluation and we're talking about a whole range of things and part of that conversation is you really need to do better at this, then it's not like I'm attacking somebody. And it also gives them a chance to talk about the things that they're frustrated with and the things that they wish were different and the things that they would like to see happen. And so you have a conversation and a dialogue and an exchange. But it's important that you're really honest. If you're giving performance evaluations and you're doing it on a scale of 1 to 10 and everything's 9 or 10, that's not helpful. Like it really, or everything's 2 or 3. Like, nobody's perfect and nobody's that bad. So to But sometimes it's hard to be honest. Sometimes it's hard to say, you know, you really need to do better at this. And here, this is a weakness that I see in you. And sometimes there just needs to be a conversation about it. Sometimes we don't understand. I had a single lady one time. She was a shopping secretary, and she did shopping. And we had the schools up north, and they would send down their lists of things they wanted, and she'd go to town and buy all the stuff, and then we'd ship it up. So she spent 2 days a week shopping. And when I did her evaluation, I rated her kind of low on creativity, and she got mad at me. And she was saying, my job doesn't allow for creativity. What do you want me to do, push the grocery cart around the store backwards? I said, okay, you have a point. Maybe I just didn't have an opportunity to see that. And maybe you really are a creative person. So I'm sorry. But you have that conversation. And you come out of it with an understanding of strengths and weaknesses. But if you're not honest, then people will pick up how you feel about them. People will pick up some of the things. It'll come through in just an offhand comment or some facial expression or something. People will pick up that you're not happy with them. So you're better off just to say it and get it out. And I believe that a systematic evaluation or performance review is an excellent tool to do that. Then fairness. Obviously, in leadership, there's people you like and people that are a little harder to get along with, and a little harder for you to relate to. But to be fair with even people that are challenging for you to relate to. You know, I've had some people over the years that were responsible to me that I struggled with, and they struggled with me. And I didn't always know how to fix it. But to try and stay objective and try not to get negative about that person and to show fairness in those situations is important. And then authenticity. These are character things that where people determine your character. Is this person trustworthy? Is this person really the real deal? Can I really trust this person? Can I really depend on them? And this all comes back to trust. If you don't have character, it's going to be hard to develop trust, because those character things will destroy the trust. Then the other side is competence, and that comes from capability. Sometimes, and it comes from results. You may have things that you're doing. You may be working with people and you're trying to influence them, and you have something you want to do, you need their involvement and they need to do it. If you have a track record of things working out, people will try things that they don't think are going to work because they know you have a track record of producing results. Or even if they know that if you see it's not working, you're going to be honest enough to say this isn't working and we're going to back out of this. So your capability, whether people have confidence in your abilities, whether you've produced results, is important in developing trust. And people will follow if you have capability and you have results. And then skills. Know what you're good at and know what you're not good at. Nobody is good at everything. Nobody has all the gifts, but nobody has zero gifts. So know what you're good at, know what you're not good at. And just because you're the leader doesn't mean you have to be the best at everything. Actually, the really good leader surrounds himself with people that are better than they are in some things, and allows them to excel, and encourages them, and compliments them, and blesses them when they excel. So you know what your, if you know what your weak, you know what your skills are, you know what you do well, and then know what you don't do well, and surround yourself with people who can do those things well. Give them opportunities to excel and to shine in areas where you don't. That's why Scripture says that the body has different members, because not one member of your body can't do everything. Imagine that. And it kind of uses some absurd language. It's like, if the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? Well, think about that. If your whole body was an eye, it wouldn't work very well. It'd be painful getting over for lunch, right? Because you'd have to roll over there and all the dirt on the floor and stuff. And it just wouldn't work very well if your whole body was an eye. And it's the same in leadership. You're not good at everything, so you need other people to help. And I will confess to you that there are some people that God has teamed up with me over the years that I wondered what their function really was. And I wasn't sure what they contributed. But because I'm the kind of person that, let's just do it. Like, it'll work. And I tend to be optimistic. I tend to think, it's going to work. Let's do it. Come on, guys. Just get with the program. But you know what? God brought some people on a team with me that were the opposite. And they would say, well, what about this and what about that? And I'd think, come on, you know, don't worry about that. It'll work out. But you know what? There was a couple things happening there. One was, some of those men had worked with me for a while, and they knew if the project didn't work, they knew who was going to pick up the pieces, them, right? And so they were nervous because they knew we needed more planning. And if I could slow down and back up and say, all right, let's talk about it, let's work it out, and let's slow down here, and we need to think about this, we need to think about that, we were much more successful because we thought about it beforehand. And we had a plan that included things that I wasn't even going to think about, but they needed to be thought about. And so those people had a role and had an important part to play. So skills are important in competence. And then knowledge. What do you know? What don't you know? How can you learn what you don't know? If you were going to go into the automobile business, you wouldn't have to start by building Model Ts. You could, things have advanced beyond that. So you could find out how to build modern day automobiles. So you wouldn't have to start back where automobiles started. You could start with where they are now. There's a lot of things in life like that, where other people have done what you want to do or something similar. And how can you learn from them? What do other people know that you ought to know in order to do what you're going to do? And to gain knowledge and to build your knowledge base. Keep learning. Keep growing. You know, one of the men that I admired was David Hershberger. He passed away about three and a half years ago. But when David Hershberger was 80 years old, he was still curious about a lot of things. Like, he wanted to learn stuff. And he wasn't just coasting. He wasn't just saying, well, I'm 80 now, and, you know, I am who I am. And that, like, he was reading books and learning stuff. And I just think we should be curious. I think we should keep building our knowledge base, keep learning, keep being inquisitive and finding, building your base of knowledge. Because one of the things that builds competence, which then builds trust, is if you're constantly increasing your knowledge and the things that you know. And so be involved in the acquisition of knowledge. And then experience. Someone said, they say that experience is the best teacher, but actually it's not. The best teacher is learning from somebody else's experience, because then you don't have to go through all the pain. Somebody did it 5 minutes before you, and you can kind of see what happened to them. So the best teacher is somebody else's experience. So, but gain experience, and by doing things, you gain competence and experience. You know, one day there was a time when you didn't know how to ride bicycle, but it's a skill. You learned it, and there's a lot of things in life that are skills, and you can learn to do them. You may have to practice. You may have to do it for a long time, but eventually it'll come. And then it gets to where it's like, well, I mean, you can do that almost naturally. Our children, a number of years ago, they wanted to learn to ride unicycle. So they got unicycles, and we went online to figure out, how do you learn to ride a unicycle? And what it said online is that it takes 40 hours to learn to ride a unicycle, because your brain has to program your balance in all directions, And so they say you back up against the wall and you start. And they say you practice for about an hour and then quit. And the next day you come back, you do another hour, and your brain gradually builds the information it needs, and it takes about 40 hours to learn to ride a unicycle. So that's what they did, and they learned to ride a unicycle. So then they could hop on a unicycle and ride all over the place, no problem. But they couldn't. It took 40 hours to learn. It took persistence. And there are a lot of things in life like that, that just you work at it, and it's not going to come easy, but you can get it, and you can get things through experience. Reputation. It's very important that you guard your reputation, that you don't mess up in some of the really important areas of life, that you know how to set boundaries for yourself, and you know how to determine what's off limits for you, and that you know what lines you won't cross, and that you are a person who has character, you are a person who lives out that character, you're a person who is faithful, who does that, and consistently over years you build a track record of being consistent and faithful and doing the things that you know are right to do. You can mess up 50 years of really good stuff in 5 minutes. You can blow it in ways that not only dishonor you, but dishonor the Lord Jesus Christ. And I think one of the biggest things is people who live for Christ for years and then lose their way. And I just think it's a shame to the name of Christ, and it just shouldn't happen. And I just encourage you to set boundaries for yourself. No, like, none of us are above failure. None of us we're all human. And you may think, I don't have to worry about that. But don't put yourself in situations where you're vulnerable, where you're in a situation where you're not accountable, or you put yourself in a vulnerable situation, because none of us are above failure. And it's important that we not only start well, but that we finish well, and that through a life of faithfulness, we build a reputation of character and of faithfulness and consistency, and where we do what is right all the way through, right from start to finish. I just can't stress to you enough how important it is that you guard your reputation, that you guard your heart, and that you commit yourself to Christ. You commit yourself to your spouse. You commit yourself to being an honorable person. One of the greatest characteristics of a leader, a man who's a leader, is to be a safe man to be with. To be a man that women can trust. That you are an honorable man, and that you are not going to take advantage of them in a moment of vulnerability or whatever, but that you are a safe man to be with. I was staying at my sister's house a couple months ago, and she has a friend, a boarder that lives there, and so I'd gone out to the kitchen in the morning to get something and came back, and I was doing something else. And anyway, the second day I was there, this boarder said to me, she said, "You know, I told your sister, boy, it's good you're a safe man, because I don't even know you're around, and all of a sudden, boom, you're behind me." And I'm like, "Boy," and she said, "You know, you'd make a good thief." And I said, "Well, maybe I should try that in another lifetime." But you know, I I came back to her and apologized to her for that, because my goal is to be a safe man. I don't want to be a thief in another lifetime. I want to be a safe man. And I just think that to be able to set boundaries for ourselves, be able to know what we're going to do and what we're not going to do, to pre-plan what am I going to do in this situation, and to think through it and be ready for when those times come, to have a reputation that is above reproach. And then credibility, believability, is what you're saying credible? Is it going to hold out? I tend to be a pretty optimistic person, and so I have to be careful that I don't over commit to things, because in the spur of the moment somebody can say, hey, we should do this or that, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll do that, sure, yeah, I'll do it, and then 2 weeks later they're kind of waiting for me to do it and I forgot about it a long time ago, right? And so every once in a while I have to ask people that I'm working with, like, have I promised you anything that I haven't done? Like, are you waiting for me to do something? Because I can be overly optimistic. And you know, it undermines your credibility if you're saying you're going to do stuff and then you don't do it. So to follow through and write stuff down, keep track of commitments that you've made, because I've forgotten about it, but the person I promised hasn't forgotten about it. When they see me, they think about it, and they wonder when I'm going to do it, and if I remember it, and chances are I don't. So being credible, credibility is important. And then performance. To be able to perform and do the things that you should be doing, fill your role, don't shirk from responsibility. You know, and all these things, you can't lead people where you're unwilling to go yourself. You have to be willing to take the bold steps and to do the courageous things yourself if you expect people to go with you. And I just encourage you to follow God's journey and adventure for your life. You know, living for Christ is a real adventure. Sometimes we get frustrated with the unknown. We get frustrated with the challenges of life. But stop and think about it. If you're going to play a game and you won every time, you'd soon lose interest, right? Because there'd be no challenge. So we like challenges. We look for challenges. In recreation, you want something that's challenging. You go skiing and you do the bunny hill, and then that's soon not challenging. Then you do something higher, and then you do something higher, and you keep looking for something that's a challenge. And in life, walking with Christ is an adventure, because he doesn't tell us the next 5 years. He doesn't tell us the next 15 years. It's a day-by-day walk with Christ. It's a walk of faith. And if you're in a situation where you're waking up most mornings and you feel like, I got it, I know what's going to happen today, and I can do it, no problem, it's going to be easy, you have too small of a vision. Like, you need to be getting a bigger vision. You need to take on some bigger challenges, because God's vision for your life is something that I just believe that we should live with an awareness that if this isn't what God is doing, I'm not going to be able to make it happen. Like, he's going to have to do some stuff here if this is going to work. And if God is with me, then we can do it. But I'm not going to be able to do it alone. The adventure of living for Christ is that he calls us into the unknown, and he calls us into a walk of faith. He calls us into a walk of the unexpected. And then he walks with us, and it's about his story and what he's doing, and we're just part of it. And then if you get to be in leadership, then you're also observing the stories of a whole bunch of other people that God has brought in relationship with you, and you're helping them define that adventure of living for Christ and walking with Christ and doing the things that he has for you to do. You know, you think about the Apostle Paul. He's on the road to Damascus, and the Lord strikes him down, and he asks the Lord, "What do you want me to do?" And you think, okay, this is the Apostle Paul, right? So God's going to tell him, all right, like, get some really good suitcases because you're going to be traveling a lot and a lot of sea voyages. And so get some stuff that's waterproof and maybe buy yourself a bunch of quills because you got a bunch of writing to do. You got, you know, the whole New Testament, most of the New Testament to write. And you got, so, you know, this is like your life is just kicking into gear right now. Like, here's what's going to happen. But you know what God told him to do? He said, get up and go into the city. And there it'll be shown. Well, that's what he was doing anyway. And then he spends 3 days there blind. And then God sends a more mature believer over. And God actually told Ananias more about what he was going to do with Saul's life than he did to Saul. And sometimes we'd like God to give us a 25-year plan, or at least a 5-year plan. But the adventure of walking with Christ is, it's a day at a time. It's a step at a time. And, you know, he brings us here. And then he takes us the next step, and then the next step. And there's always adventure there. But that's the excitement of living for Christ. That's the adventure of the Christian life. And if you think about, well, you know, what else would you do? How else would you want to live life? Is there anything else that's more exciting? Is there anything else that's more thrilling than walking with Christ and being involved in other people's lives? We do a meal at the town where I live for the street people on Sunday afternoons. And a couple months ago, I was sitting with the guys at the table, and they got to talking about the rapture and the return of Christ. And there was this young guy sitting at the end of the table, and he said, "Do you really think that's going to happen?" "Yeah, I do." And he said, "What makes you think he's coming back?" I said, "Well, everything else he said he did, so he said he was coming back, so I kind of believe he's going to do that too. So I think he's coming back." And he said, "Well, I don't really buy into that." He said, "I don't think that's going to happen." He said, "So how do you know that the whole world isn't just a science project that was set up by space aliens?" And I said, "Well, it doesn't seem like a science project to me. I don't think that's what it is." And he said, "But what if it is? What if it's a big science project set up by space aliens, and one day the space aliens come back and they say, okay, the project's done, we're dismantling everything." He said, "I bet you're going to wish that you had done a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't do because you thought Jesus was coming back." I said, "No, I don't. I'm happy the way I'm living. Like, I like the life I have. I've got a really good life. If the space aliens come back and fold up the project, I'll say, well, that was pretty good." And I'm not going to be disappointed at all. Because, you know, we're not kind of going through a life of drudgery, trying not to do a whole bunch of stuff and trying to be really good because somebody's come. Like, we're serving the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, right? And we're taking a whole bunch of people with us and influencing them to do the same thing. Like, that's pretty good. Also, don't shrink back from pain and brokenness. We live in a broken world. And part of being a leader is that we help to carry the pain of other people. Someone has said, if you struggle with carrying your own pain, it's going to be hard for you to carry the pain of other people. And I think it's important that we develop ourselves and we develop a relationship with Christ that allows us not only to deal with our own lives, but also to help to carry the pain of other people. Because when you put yourself, when you take responsibility in leadership, you help to carry the pain of broken people who struggle to carry their pain. Enter into it, allow God to bring you through it, and take other people with you. What questions do you have? Any questions or comments?
Emphasize trust.
Yeah. Well, I feel like to rebuild trust, it takes a lot of face-to-face conversation, dialogue, and openness. And in some cases, it takes some time to reestablish a track record and just to start with little things that build trust. And sometimes when trust is broken, it can't just be fixed real quickly. You have to start with small steps and allow people, like you look at Joseph with his brothers, he didn't just say, "Hey guys, great to have you back." Like, he put them through the paces and he checked them out. And he gives Benjamin 5 times as much food as the rest. And he, you know, says, "Well, you guys can go, just leave Benjamin here." And he's kind of seeing what happened. So I think checking and taking small steps can help. And depending what it is, you know, accountability and needs to be very much a part of the whole process. One of the things I've found, I'm done. But one of the things I found is that the people who resist accountability the most are generally the ones who need it. The people who say, "You don't trust me, you're treating me like a kid," they're the ones that eventually it really doesn't turn out. Like, they're the ones who really need it. The guy who says, "Sure, yeah, I'll be accountable. Sure, you can check my computer. You can do whatever you want to do. You don't have to worry about him too much because he's open for accountability." All right, Dave.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.